This presentation of ThinkTech Hawaii is made possible by Hawaiian Electric Company and its affiliates, Maui Electric on Maui, and Hawaii Electric Light Company on Hawaii Island are deeply committed to the communities they serve. Galen Ho, the senior executive at BAE Systems, a global defense, security, and aerospace company. The High-Tech Development Corporation, the state's leading technology agency attached to the Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism. Castle & Cook Hawaii, for the time-honored legacy that spans more than 160 years and revolves around this nation's investment in Hawaii, creating communities and providing for the needs of our state. Hawaii Gas, formerly the Gas Company, a component of the Liquefied Natural Gas Initiative, help Hawaii achieve transition to clean energy and a better energy future. Collateral Analytics, a Hawaii-based tech company powering the real estate industry with greater and faster access to the tools and data needed to better inform property and investment decisions.
Good evening and welcome to Pacific Forum's Issues and Insights. This evening we're going to be talking about an issue, a problem that you probably know something about or you've heard a little bit about it, but we're going to explore it in a lot more depth. Our topic for this evening's show is North Korea's refugees, canary in the coal mine or not? And to help us with this discussion, I want to warn you, may be a little bit sobering, but it'll be a fascinating discussion. We have a very unusual woman with us in the studio today. This is Ms. Suna An, and Suna is formerly with the Office of the Chief of Staff for South Korea's Blue House, and she was formerly working with him on North Korean refugee matters, and Ms. An is now a Kelly Fellow with Pacific Forum CSIS. And Suna, it's nice to have you here with us.
Thank you for having me.
And I want to tell our audience a little bit about what is going on in Seoul this week that makes this whole discussion that we're about to have so timely, because as I understand it, the United Nations Human Rights Commission is currently holding hearings in Seoul. And ladies and gentlemen, what's going on is that this UN panel is hearing just absolutely harrowing accounts of brutality in North Korea and in the North Korean prisons. And several witnesses have been testifying about being forced to watch the brutal execution of family members along with torture and other horrific human rights violations. And the North Korean refugee numbers to South Korea have been climbing. There may be some change in that, if I'm not mistaken, but they have been climbing. And among the questions that we want to discuss with Suna this evening's program is whether or not this whole refugee problem is really a canary in the coal mine for the regime in Pyongyang. Is it a tripwire? And we also want to explore with her what actions the governments or international organizations are taking to try to handle this horrific problem. And so, Suna, with that kind of as a backdrop for our listeners and our audience, let's start first with, for those in our audience who really don't know, you know, the picture regarding refugees from North Korea is pretty grim.
Yes.
And what's their plight really like? And before you answer that question, I just want to tell our audience that Suna, in her previous position working with the Blue House in South Korea, has had an opportunity to interview many of these refugees and defectors and had a chance to talk with them and hear their experiences and stories. So this is a lady who's had the experience on the ground. She's not an academic in this topic. Yeah. So what is, generally speaking, what is their plight? How would you describe it?
The escape from the North Korea, and it is starting from the mid-1990s because of the famine and constant hunger. So it is started from the economic reasons, but it has been developed to the political reasons. So there are nearly 200,000 people in Northeast China. The amazing thing is the 70% of them are women.
Now this is in North?
In Northeast China.
Northeast China.
So yeah, the size of the population is there. So the 200,000 people is not that small amount. So I was wondering that, like, why those many people are like actually escaped from their country. But I found out that there's so many reasons of the what they have in North Korea. I met one North Korean woman, and she told me the one story of her friend, and she repatriated twice.
She repatriated twice.
Twice by the Chinese government.
What now? What repatriated means? What, like, for our audience? It means
it's like she caught by the Chinese authority, and she sent back to the North Korea.
So she escaped two times, and was sent back two times,
and her third try, she finally made it to the South Korea, and in her case. Actually, when she was in North Korea, she had a daughter, but she felt like there's no hope in North Korea because she kept hungry and there's no food to eat. So she decided to cross the border to find some food. But she brought her daughter with her and across the border using the Tumen River. But right after, near the border, there's so many human traffickers, especially targeting the North Korean women. So when she arrived at the Chinese border, near the Chinese border, and she get into the one of the house because she doesn't know where to go. She just jump into any houses in there, and she just asked them to like stay there for a while.
Okay.
And then at that night, there's human traffickers, and they really knows those North Korean women are, there are a lot of North Korean women in those Chinese houses.
Okay, let me stop you for a second. Mm-hmm. 200,000 North Koreans mm-hmm. in Northeast China.
Yes.
All refugees.
Mm-hmm.
And did you say 70% of mm-hmm. them are women?
Yes.
And so this human trafficking is the whole industry is preying on these North Korean lady refugees.
Mm.
Right? And what do the human traffickers do with the women?
Actually, they sell those women and they're getting money.
And they sell them to whom?
Sell them to, there's two types of the selling to. It's like the first type is they sell those women to the Chinese husband, or they sell off those women to the prostitutions.
So prostitution or?
Or Chinese husband.
Some kind of Chinese husband somewhere else in China.
Yes. Since the Northeast China region, there's so many Chinese men who doesn't get married because they're so poor, and there's so many disabled and old guys, because there's some scholars found the reason it is because the one child policy. So they try to get a man rather than daughters. So it makes that there are more portion of the men rather than women. So there's lack of women. So they have to buy a woman for their like next generation.
Okay, so let's do this. Mm-hmm. I want to continue with this story, but I want to help our audience a little bit. So, Mr. Producer, if you're there, could you put up the first of all, let's show our audience the photo of the North Korean guard on the Yalu River there. And for our radio audience, you can't see this, but we're looking at a photograph of a North Korean lady, a mm-hmm. Soldier, mm-hmm. behind a barbed wire. And so this is a picture taken right at a border crossing on the Yalu River.
Yes.
And so these ladies and North Korean refugees have to get past these soldiers and this barbed wire to what they believe is a better life in China.
Yes, that's true. And it is so dangerous to cross the border, but they think that it is worthwhile to take a risk to escape North Korea because their life in North Korea is quite severe.
And so, Mr. Producer, if we could go to the next photograph here, which would be the one with the guards and the lady in the pink. And so, Sunaan, this is a famous photo, is it not?
Oh, yeah, that's true. This is a picture of how North Korean refugees caught by the Chinese government in the Japanese consulate office. So she tried to get into the consulate's office to find a
safe haven.
Yes, safe haven, but the Chinese authorities caught her and separate her from her daughters.
So if you're watching this on our live streaming, you would see two Chinese policemen or soldiers blocking a woman from getting into the gate of the Japanese consulate mm-hmm. Somewhere in China. And there's a young girl standing behind. As I understand it, that's the daughter of this lady.
Yes.
So mother and her daughter and being blocked.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Mr. Producer, if you would show us one more, and that's the routes of repatriation of Chinese, North Korean refugees, and we'll get back to your story here, Sunaan, of this lady. But if you could help the viewer understand this map a little bit, this shows three routes of refugees coming out of North Korea.
Yeah. Actually, right after cross the border, they stay a few days or a few years in the northeast China. Then some of them just remain there to live in China, but some of them try to get into the South Korea to have more freedom and to live. So they choose like any other countries to get a route. So, and there's a broker to help them. So some of them go to Mongolia and Myanmar, and especially Laos and Thailand, those kind of countries, they're using it as a gate through the South Korea.
So some of these, as an example, one of these routes, the North Korean refugees, they escape through, pass through China, come down mm-hmm. through Vietnam into Laos and Cambodia, and eventually repatriated
yeah.
back to South Korea out of Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that as kind of background, let's go back to your story. This lady that you, friend of one of the refugees that you had interviewed.
Yeah.
You have her in the story now. In her first time, she's in China, and the human traffickers show up at the door.
Yeah, show up at the door, and then she was so surprised, and actually she was learned that like there's so many human traffickers, and she has to really aware of, and she has a daughter of herself, so she
was like this woman in the pink that we saw, right?
Just like that.
She has a young daughter with her.
Yeah, so she wanted to protect her daughter, so she started to yelling or screaming and just like asking some help, but that makes noisy, and that makes a Chinese citizen to call the police. The Chinese police.
Okay.
So you can imagine that when the Chinese police see her, they do not see her as a victim, but they do see her as a criminal against the North Korean border law.
Okay.
So they got repatriated her to North Korea again.
They send her home.
Yes,
back
sent
to
her
North
home.
Korea.
Yeah, that's true.
And then what happens?
And then when they got to the North Korea, they got investigation from the North Korean supervisors. And they checked the two types of things. The first thing is mental, and the second thing is physical things.
I'll tell you what.
Okay.
We'll go into this checking of the repatriated lady when she gets back, sent back to North Korea after the break.
Okay.
And stay with us. We'll be right back.
Aloha, I'm Jay Fidel. I want to tell you about our program this month. We're doing a luncheon panel program at the Plaza Club with the Hawaii Venture Capital Association and ThinkTech about China. It's Don't Be Afraid to Send Your Kid or CEO to China. Stories of daring do and of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in the People's Republic. We want to introduce you to some people who have lived in China and show you that life in China is not so bad. It's not all about corruption and environmental degradation and lack of civil or human rights. It's not like that. And we want to have them tell you their day-to-day stories about how they've lived there. So our moderator is Larry Foster. He has taught law in China, and he has been practicing law in China for a firm in Shanghai. His wife, Brenda Foster, is on the panel. She has been the president of the American Chamber of Commerce in Shanghai. We have Russell Liu. He's an attorney practicing with Shepard Mullen in Beijing for quite some time. Shackley Raffetto, a circuit court judge from Maui, who, after retiring, went to China so he could teach judicial process there. And Nikki Shishido, who has worked for DBED, the Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism of the state of Hawaii, in Beijing for some time. All these people have had the experience of living on the ground in China. We want to have them tell their stories to you. So maybe this will encourage you to send your kid or CEO to China. So if you're interested in this program, which ought to be very interesting, come down on August 22nd. You can sign up at hvca.org. I'm Jay Fidel. Mahalo. We'll see you then.
Welcome back. This is Pacific Forum's Issues and Insights. I'm David Day, and our guest today is Ms. Suna An, formerly with the Office of the Chief of Staff of the Blue House for South Korea, and has been working on North Korean refugee matters. And Ms. An is now a Kelly Fellow with Pacific Forum here in Hawaii. And Suna, right at the break, we were of course talking about our topic today, North Korean refugees, and you were telling the story of interviewing and this lady who had been repatriated or sent back by the Chinese after her first escape.
Yes.
And so she gets back to the prison supervisors and they start an inspection. So
yes, right.
Tell me what happens then?
At the first, they ask them to take off all of the clothes, even the underwears, to see whether they have money in their pocket. Okay. So if they found any money, the supervisor took it. And whether they have any like dangerous weapons or something. And she told us that it was very embarrassed and she felt very shameful. And then what they asked to them is the three questions.
Three questions, okay.
Yeah, the first one
is... Stripped naked.
Yes, stripped naked.
And then they asked the three questions.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the first question is that, have you ever met South Korean?
Have you ever met a South Korean?
South Korean is China. And have you ever tried to get into the South Korea? And have you ever heard any Christianity or have you go to church in the China?
Okay, so two South Korean questions and
one Christianity.
Okay, explain what that's all about.
We can see that like if they say he or she really tries to get into the South Korea, they see that they're criminal against the country and they try to abandon their country, so their punishment is much severe. So if that is true, he or she send to the a political prison camp.
So different.
Yeah, different camp.
Different camp.
Yes.
Much more severe.
Much more severe, and like, and some who really involve in many South Koreans or something, then he can be a political criminal, so he can be get a death sentence.
Executed.
Yeah, executed.
Okay, now hold on 1 second. Mm-hmm. This is very sobering what you're saying, and what you're saying is that the contact by a North Korean refugee mm-hmm. who's sent back to North Korea, contact with a South Korean or try to go to South Korea mm-hmm. or a Christian church is a political crime sent to a much more severe prison with possibility of execution. Mm-hmm. And isn't the reason for that let me ask you, why do they treat that as a more severe crime?
I think the first two questions about the South Korea is actually they don't want to collect their reason because of everyone like just escaped their country, so they think that those people has to get more punishment to show it to their public. So I think that's one of the reason. And the Christianity is like they're very there's one dictator, and this one cannot be replaced any other like religions or something. But Christianity teach them to there's God other than like Kim Jong-un.
The Christianity or religious problem mm-hmm. is that it's a direct conflict with mm-hmm. the dear leader
yes.
Being the president for life or for in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
And the South Korea questions really come because the contact with South Korea or attempted contact
mm-hmm.
really puts the lie to the whole propaganda machine of Pyongyang that the South is poor and impoverished mm-hmm. and backwards and we're more advanced, right?
Yes,
it breaks the whole
yes, right.
propaganda machine.
Yes, right, that's true.
So this lady now, come back to our story, this lady,
yes.
Did they decide she's a political? How does she answer the three questions? What happens?
I mean, technically, she just cut off the Chinese authority right after she arrived there. So it seems like she doesn't really willing to go into the South Korea. This
right.
what they evaluate her. So she just went sent to the training camp.
Okay.
So in the training camp, they have to do some forced labor, but it's not gonna be the death sentence or something.
Okay.
So she and her daughter sent to the training camp, but she said like the situation in training camp also inhumane and brutal, because she saw that in one room there's nearly 50 people.
50?
Yeah, 50 people had to share the one room, and so many times the supervisors beat them or torture them
in the training camp.
Yes, and at night, especially some supervisors call the young girls and did a rape.
Rapes them.
Yeah. So it's quite an inhumane situation, and even in the training camp. And when she did forced labor in there, she went to the mountain to gather the wild grasses. That was her job. And she seeked some chance to escape the mountain, to escape those camp. And she got a chance, and she ran away from the mountain.
Leaving her daughter behind?
Yeah, leaving her daughter behind, because
okay.
she was thinking that she has to leave to escape her later. So that's why she chose. So she across the border again.
But this is her second time.
Yeah, second time. But what she has faced was the exact same with the before one. So she met a similar human traffickers, and she lived like for a month, a little bit longer, but still she got repatriated again to the North Korea.
So Chinese authorities again?
Yeah, so Chinese citizens and neighbors are called to report to the Chinese authority there is a North Korean woman. It is really easy to find out because they cannot speak any Chinese. So if the Chinese neighbor are called to police, it's kind of really high risk. So she got repatriated to North Korea again, and she sent to the similar training camp. So she experienced a similar situation, but at the time she was so experienced, so she knows how to escape here. That's what she said. And then she escaped those camp again. And this third time, at the time she was so exhausted and her health is not that really good. So she said she just lost her mind in the middle of liver. But luckily...
So she has to swim across the river?
Yes, yeah, okay. Swim across the river, but she just lost her consciousness. And then when she opened her eyes again, luckily there is a person who helped her to bring her up from the water. So that's how she got saved. So through this person who helped her, she can meet a broker to get into the South Korea, and she asked them to try to find her daughter in North Korea. So through the broker, she finally can make it to the South Korea.
And did her daughter finally make it to South Korea?
Yes, that's true. So yeah, through the broker, yeah, that's how they get together.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have shown you and talked about these routes of repatriation with a map for those of you who are watching our live streaming. And Mr. Producer, if you could put up the chart that shows the numbers of North Korean defectors or refugees. And Suna, let me ask you, is there a difference in South Korea in use of the word defector compared to refugee?
In South Korea, who lives in, the North Korea who lives in South Korea, they officially, the Ministry of Unification called them as defector.
Okay.
But I think those who live in China, Northeast China especially, I think they have to refer as a refugees.
Okay, so yeah. Look at this chart now, and can you, This shows an extremely last few years, the last decade, the mm-hmm. numbers of refugees or defectors mm-hmm. into South Korea
yes.
climbing. And is that the trend that we see today?
Yes, that's true. Actually, until the 2012, the number of North Korean defectors getting to South is increasing. So it's nearly 25,000 people lives in South Korea. But from the 2012, the number of people amazingly decreased.
Okay,
like
so
from until the 2011, the number of people average of number of people are nearly 2,500 people per year.
Are you saying the number of refugees is declining? It's going down?
Yeah.
Why? Why would that be?
It is because it was increasing, like the chart says, but especially in 2012, after the Kim Jong-un's regime, the scholars or expertise and NGOs said that the border restriction was tightened. After the Kim Jong-un's regime, yeah, many people say that is the reason.
So the trickle of refugees making it to Seoul mm-hmm. is dropping off, from
yes.
what you're saying, because of Kim Jong-un's regime.
Yes.
And they have tightened up on security and mm-hmm. and making it much tougher for people to get out of the country.
Yes, sir.
Boy. Let's take one other picture here, Mr. Producer. If you would put up the lady with the sunglasses here, and
Suna, this woman, a North Korean defector, Kim Hae-yong, for those in our listening audience, you cannot see this, but this is a woman that is, you can see from the photograph, the tears running down her face. What can you tell us about this lady? What does this picture really show?
I think every North Korean defectors, they experience extremely dangerous situation during the time when they escape from the North Korea to South Korea. So it seems like as it looks like she wearing the sunglasses, but her tears cannot hiding. So yeah, like this, the North Korean defector's life is exactly the same with this picture. Like they're hiding in the South Korea to try to hide their like sufferings and their sorrows. But actually, since they already experienced so many brutal and severe situations, those tears cannot be away.
You know, this week in Seoul, that one of the witnesses was testifying for the United Nations mm-hmm. Human Rights Commission.
Yes.
That he was forced to watch the execution of his mother.
Yes.
And that event, or those types of horrific human rights situations, has to leave an emotional scarring that will never go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's what we were seeing in that picture.
Yes, right.
You know, just a terrible, horrific situation. We've talked about the human rights violations in Northeast China.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you, Suna, are there many refugees that are able to come out from the south? Do they come through the DMZ?
You mean the
demilitarized? Do they come through the DMZ?
I don't think so.
No. Do they come around by boat very often from the south?
It's not that often, but there are some cases.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We have some more. We're going to be talking about the future and the involvement of governments and international organizations when we come back after the break.
Hi, I'm Donna Blanchard of Kumukuhui Theater, and when I was young, I used to love watching Charlie Chan movies on Family Classic TV on Sunday afternoons. Our show at Kumukuhua that runs from August 22nd through September 22nd is called Will the Real Charlie Chan Please Stand Up? It's written by Nancy P. Moss and takes place right here in Chinatown. I really hope you'll come in and watch it. You will love it. It's everything about the movies that you loved and more. Go to kumukuhua.org to get more information and your tickets.
Aloha, I'm Sharon Moriwaki with the Hawaii Energy Policy Forum. Please join Jay Fidel and me every Wednesday, 4 o'clock p.m. on Energy Wednesday. See you then.
Hi, my name is Attila Saras, and I'm the host for Think Tech Friday, a weekly radio show about things that matter to Hawaii. You can tune in every Friday at thinktechhawaii.com.
We're back, and I'm David Day. You're listening or watching, depending upon your situation, to Pacific Forum's Issues and Insights. We're talking about North Korean refugees, and our special guest in the studio with us today is Ms. Suna An, a Kelly Fellow with Pacific Forum CSIS. And Suna was formerly working with the Office of the Chief of Staff for South Korea's Blue House, and she worked on North Korean refugee matters. And that's the topic of our conversation today. And during the first half of the show, Suna, you have painted a very, gruesome, sobering picture of this horrendous problem that involving these refugees. And before we get into what organizations are doing about it, because you have been in a situation where you've worked on these problems for the Blue House in Seoul, and you've interviewed refugees, how is their transition into life in South Korea? How is their assimilation? How does that work?
Once after they get into the South Korea, they those people are sent to the unification center, like you call the Hanawon. So they learn how to live in South Korea. So after like graduation that center, they got compensated by the government per month. So, and it's depending on their situations, like if they have families in South Korea or if they have like children, it depends on the kind of situation. They compensate those peoples. And there are also many programs to help them to adjust in South Korea.
It's a difficult adjustment, is it not?
Yes. I mean, North Korean and South Korean live totally different society. And
that's right.
Yeah. So especially when I see the teenagers in from this North Korea, the one of the most physically different thing is that their height is much smaller than North Korean average height.
Wait. You mean the South Korean average height?
Yeah, it's much higher than North Korean.
So we have two. Let's say we have two teenage boys, mm-hmm. one from North Korea mm-hmm. and one from South Korea. Mm-hmm. So you can immediately tell which one is a South Korean by their height and their muscle development.
Yeah. Sadly, it shows the height is really different.
How much, as an example? Is it like an inch or so, or more than that?
They say like 10 centimeters. They differ average 10 centimeters. Wow. And it is because of the nutrition program is totally different. So normally the South Korean is higher than the North Korean. So physically it seems like we're different.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So from that stance, the North Korean never heard about the democracy or like how the money is important in South Korea, and they never learn English before, which is very important in the South Korea, and they never experience any educational like system, as the South Korea is most enthusiasm in their education. So it's really hard for them to follow the educational level.
So they're two totally different cultures.
Totally different.
And it's like the North Koreans come from some kind of movie, like a time warp, right? Mm-hmm. They come into this blazing, mm-hmm. fast, intense culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so in terms of the assimilation of these refugees into South Korean society, do they tend to be at the very bottom in terms of making money and success and all that? Is it like a permanent lower class?
I have to say the government tried to help them to promote their like national level or national economical standards, but still there is a discrimination, and for them it's really hard to get a job, proper job. So many North Koreans just do not work in the South Korea, and they think that like, is it better to get a governmental money from rather than working South Korea.
So what you're saying is the refugees are becoming a permanent welfare class in South Korea.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that a fair statement?
It's like if they don't work, if they do not have any proper job, the government support them. But sometimes they earn more money from the government rather than they're working by themselves. So some people just decided, I'm not going to work.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is pretty huge like problem, I think, in South Korea.
It's sort of a warning, or if you can imagine, a reunification of the two countries mm-hmm. will have similar problem, right?
Yes, that's true.
Difficult assimilation because they are so
different.
Totally different, right?
Yeah, and they're like the value systems, like in South Korean, they think that the money is not that like evil, and they think the money is good one. But North Korean have been teach by that, like, money is the total evil in their society. So pursuing the money is quite a evil thing.
It's a bad, yeah.
It's really bad. But when they see the South Korean try to get more money, they feel like it's very uncomfortable, and they're working for getting a money makes them feeling more uncomfortable.
Okay. Well, let's change topics for a moment here. Let's talk about, I'm interested to know, and I know our audience is interested about, what's the government of South Korea and the international organizations, what are they doing about this horrendous refugee problem from North Korea? Let's take the government of South Korea first. What is the strategy?
Until the President Noh Moo-hyun, the government took a so-called silent diplomacy.
Silent diplomacy.
Yeah, silent diplomacy, which is that they do not raise this issue officially, and they just want to treat this issue on official channel, like, because they don't want to give any pressure to the China.
Okay, so...
So if they ask to Chinese government then not to repatriate those North Korean, and if they ask to the Chinese government that you have to admit them as a refugees, it can be a real pressure, and it can make bad relationship with China. So the government don't want to ask the Chinese government officially, so they just want to keep silent.
Okay.
And just try to focus on rescuing those North Korean refugees very secretly and without making any noises.
Okay, well, what about international organizations? Human Rights Watch, those, what are they doing?
Especially the UN High Commissioner for Refugees did a tremendous job to rescue those refugees, but the thing is, they could not, the Chinese government do not allow them to investigate in those areas. So UN High Commissioner for Refugees didn't even step into those areas.
So you mean the whole Northeast China area, where that 200,000 refugee population, 70% are women, the UN Commission has been blocked by China?
Yes, right. And but there is some Korean NGOs and non-governmental NGOs in those areas, which is normally the Christian NGOs, and what they're doing is try help them to rescue from those regions, and there is some organizations, like especially United States. They have Committee for Human Rights in North Korea. They did a lot of research job and like survey in those area to get some raw materials. And like you said, the UN Commission of Inquiry on Human Rights in North Korea started their investigation in the South Korea, Japan, many other countries, but still they cannot get into the Northeast China.
Let's see if I can summarize what we have here now. Mm-hmm. Most, 90% or more, of the North Korean refugees, because of the situation with the DMZ, if they're going to escape the country, they have to go north across the Yalu River, or what is the other?
Tuman Rivers.
Okay, and so they cross into Northeast China. Mm-hmm. And effectively, what you're saying is the only organization that is in place to help these refugees get out of China and eventually get to South Korea or elsewhere in the world is a series of Christian churches that pass the refugees from one to the other. Do I have that about right? Is that?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, it reminds me of the. At the time of shortly before the American Civil War, we had a series of safe houses for slaves that were moved from one safe house to the next, and the Christian churches throughout China and into Southeast Asia essentially performing the same function, are they not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And those NGOs and Christian groups are conduct educational things, and they teach them about the South Korea, and they're kind of did a role of the channel through the South Korea.
You are listening to Pacific Forum's Issues and Insights. Our discussion today is North Korea's refugees, canary in the coal mine. And our guest is Ms. Suna An, a Kelly Fellow with Pacific Forum. And I'm David Day, and we have some very interesting information for you. We'll share with you when we come back after the break. Stay with us.
Aloha, I'm Jay Fidel. This is Think Tech Hawaii, broadcasting live from the Pioneer Plaza in downtown Honolulu. We raise public awareness about tech, energy, and globalism in Hawaii. Technology is critical to our state. A vibrant tech sector will give us new prospects in the global marketplace and will offer great careers and make our economy more resilient. Streaming live on Ustream and Spreaker, ThinkTech allows its hosts and guests invaluable opportunities to report important events and discuss important questions, and to be heard here in Hawaii and around the world. You can find links to our live streams on thinktechhawaii.com or on our mobile website, m.thinktechhawaii.com. And you can see our archive on YouTube. It's all just a click away. We want to do whatever we can to keep Hawaii relevant, connected, and thriving in the complexity of the 21st century. We hope you will help us in those efforts. Tune in today. This is ThinkTech. I'm Jay Fidel. Mahalo.
We are back, and you're watching or listening, depending on your situation, to Pacific Forum's Issues and Insights. Our topic today, North Korea's refugees, canary in the coal mine, or what? And our guest is Ms. Suna An, a Kelly Fellow with Pacific Forum, CSIS, here in Honolulu. And Ms. An, formerly with the Office of the Chief of Staff for South Korea's Blue House, working on North Korean refugee matters. And Suna, for our audience, just so they can appreciate this, you are kind of the South Korean equivalent of a White House Fellow, or you were, right?
I used to be.
You used to be something like that, okay.
Yeah.
But here's what's important, ladies and gentlemen, is that Ms. An is someone who is actually been on the ground interviewing and working with and listening to the horrific stories of North Korean refugees that have eventually made it or been repatriated all the way to South Korea, depending on whatever route they took. And that's been the focus of our program today. And Suna, let me ask you, you've been involved in this problem for quite some time now. What do we do about it? What are your recommendations?
I mean, for like South Korean government first, I think South Korean government need to self-reflect themselves, because before we really argue some human rights issues in the refugees, they have to take care of what they have. Like North Korean defectors who lives in South Korea, they suffering from the many discrimination in the society, and there is so many unjust problems. So I think South Korea need to solve these internal problems first.
And this is because, as you talked about earlier, because the refugees come from a totally different culture.
Yes.
And very difficult to assimilate into South Korean society, so mm-hmm. they're kind of at the bottom of the mm-hmm. class.
Yeah.
Deep. Okay.
So if we cannot make them happy, I think even though we're like make reunification, we cannot like really gonna be happy. I mean, if we do not really raise their human rights, or if we do not release erase those discriminations, even though we can reunify again, I don't think there's gonna be really peaceful reunification.
So let me try what you're saying.
I want
to understand, because
yep.
I think this, what you're saying is really fascinating, because this concept of the canary in the coal mine mm-hmm. is a tripwire, mm-hmm. meaning it's a warning. When the canary dies, the
yes.
miners have to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're saying is that,
before South Korea really focuses on the big, huge problem of political reunification with the North, the government has to find a way to solve the problem with the existing refugees that are there in South Korea already, to learn how to assimilate those small numbers before they tackle the big problem. Is that about right?
That's what I meant for the South Korean government. And for the international society, actually one of the Korean researchers did an amazing job on the survey on in the Northeast China region. And they asked the people that, what do you want the international organizations or international society to do for you?
You mean they're interviewing Chinese in Northeast China?
I mean, they're interviewing North Korean refugees in Northeast China.
Okay.
Yeah, and they asked, what do you want the international society to do for you?
Okay.
To do something for you. Then the 36% of them answers that they want them to secure their stable life in China. And the only 25% of them answers that they want the international society to help them to escape from the China.
So more want to stay.
Yeah, more want to stay, and they want a stable life rather than like escaping from this region and take a risk during the trip. And it reminds me that most of the international society and international group, so far, they focus on rescuing those people from the China or North Korea.
Okay.
But I think there is a human rights issue in women's, their human rights violation against women and human rights violation against children. But since they only see this issue as a refugee issue, any other like human rights organizations which dealing with women's rights and children's rights didn't really engage in this issue.
So the whole human trafficking problem, there has been no engagement on that yet. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there is little engagement, but not that huge.
Okay.
And there is no real like activeness or something. So I think the international society need to broaden their like solutions and need to broaden their measures to protect those refugees. Rescuing them can be a solution, but improving the human rights in the China can be another solution. And improving the human rights against women can be another solution. And yeah, that's what I wanted to mention it.
Let me ask you this: Why is the Chinese government so unreceptive to those refugees from North Korea? Is it because the numbers are so huge? They're afraid of being an avalanche coming across the two rivers.
Yeah, that is the one reason. And as you know, the China and North Korea has a special relationship. So, as far as I know, yeah, they don't want to hurt that relationship because of this issue.
I see.
Yeah.
So by sending the refugees back, they are giving the appearance of putting their support behind the regime in Pyongyang.
Yes.
Okay, I got you. And let me turn a little bit more directly now to home here, that is in the United States. What do you see as the, if you're looking to the future, Suna, what role should do you think the U.S. should play in this whole North Korean refugee situation?
I think so far the United States is one of the most active countries in terms of North Korean human rights issue. As you know, in 2004, they passed as a first country, the North Korean Human Rights Act when the Bush administration has. And last year, the Obama administration passed a law of the North Korean Child Welfare Act, which allows the adoption to the United States from the North Korea. I think United States has so many efforts on to improve their human rights, but as I told you before, the rescuing them, like actually the North Korean Children Welfare Act was used to be North Korean Child Adoption Act rather than the Welfare Act, but since there is a controversial like disputes, they changed the name of the act as a Welfare Act. So I think we need to...
We are about out of time.
Oh, yeah.
There's more that we could do, mm-hmm. but thank you so much for this wonderful conversation, Sinan. And ladies and gentlemen, you've been watching Pacific Forum's Issues and Insights. I'm David Day. Have a safe drive home.